children.
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
I just have my tablet and my Nintendo Switch and a little fucking electronics boy
yeah,
for like
you're
the entire
also,
thing.
Yeah, you're also like really tiny, so I'm sure no one gives a shit. For me, I'm just like, I'm sorry my thighs are the size that they are. Like
I do slink through a lot of like creases when it comes to getting out. Like if I need to sit towards the window and go to the restroom, I'm fine. Nobody cares.
Like, I did sit in
I
the,
slither, you
I
know?
Slither.
I slither amongst the plane to get to where I need to go. Yeah, that's how it works.
You know all. You know who else had unconventional travel methods?
One of the main characters in this particular film?
The main character of this film that we're about to cover. I don't have a segue.
I was trying to work my way to a plane analogy for the bathroom when you let the right one in. Yeah, but you know, I also, unconventional travel makes sense.
Unconventional, I
agree.
Let's just go.
I'm jet lagged. We're good.
Leave me alone.
And you got another recording tomorrow, too.
Oh, fuck. I still have to write that thing.
Delirium continues. Let's do it.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, the jet lagged Alex Webster. Mm-hmm. Joining me always is Anthony Fuentes.
Very, very caffeinated today.
He's super caffeinated.
Yeah. He has... They ran out of oat milk, and I'm like, just give me cold brew with light half and half. And
ooh. Yeah, living on the edge today. I had my first oat milk latte in New York City.
Oh, really? Was it from the Bucks, or was it from its own
no.
place?
So my rule, dear listeners, hi, when I travel is I try to only eat at places that I can only get at that place. Like,
okay, that
I don't
makes sense.
I don't want it, like, you know, like, just try to make it as mm-hmm. genuine of an experience as possible.
Yeah.
Which was actually really fun.
Yeah.
And great. So I got to try a like New York specific chain coffee places mm-hmm. or like even New York City specific coffee places. It was really cool.
No, I agree. That see now Starbucks is the only thing that breaks that rule for me. Because sometimes I need a quick just bit of energy.
Sure. I mean, if I was at the airport, maybe. Like, I did consider getting Dunkin'.
Always at the airport.
I did almost consider getting Dunkin', mm-hmm. only because it seems like it is a very much an East Coast thing.
Yeah. Isn't it a little different over there, too, or no?
I mean, what do you mean?
Dunkin' Donuts?
I think it's just, like, I've seen two Dunkin' Donuts in, like, my neighborhood
mm-hmm.
versus there. It's like there was one next to my hotel. You
yeah.
know what I
no,
mean?
No, yeah, it's fucking everywhere. You know, and they do have the New York water too. So that, yeah, that's going to make it better automatically. Have you tried the tap water?
Yes.
It's fucking insane. I'm used to this. I live in a factory. My tap water comes out black every once in a while. Like, it's not the same. Ugh.
That is true. Caitlin did look at me like I was a crazy person, just because I had a brief reaction.
Yeah.
Because we were at a restaurant and they were like, okay, do you want sparkling mineral or tap water? And like looked like straight face, do you want tap water? And I was just like, you never admit that it's tap water
That's
in LA.
True.
Like you just ask if you want water.
If you want water, no questions asked.
Like, do you just want water? Mm-hmm. And they specifically, like, every place that we ate mentioned specifically tap water. And, like, Caitlin was just like, can we just have, like, the tap water? And I was just like, oh, my God. I'm going to get lead poisoning.
No. They told me that before I flew over there. They were just like, no, dude, try the water. Try the water. I'm like, it's fucking water. And I'm like, oh, this is, like, really goddamn
good. It was really good water, like, to be fair.
It actually feels pretty pure. Yeah, I was fine.
Yeah, I was, yeah. The one thing I was like, oh, I'll probably try this. And I never ended up trying because I don't know what it was, but I think it was the smell.
Uh-huh.
Hot dog vendor people.
Oh, okay. I did one.
Was it good?
It's not anything. It wasn't that much more special, to be honest with you.
Okay.
We have LA dogs. The bacon in it.
We have street vendor dogs. Like, the people who wait outside of the clubs for the drunk and the hungry.
No. I mean, don't get me wrong. The New York dog was fantastic, but we have the best dog. It's
really?
It's the best one.
That is bold words from Anthony Fuentes. This is...
Stick and bite.
All right. Enough about...
We're going to lose our minds here, yes.
Enough about my New York trip. Thank you, everyone, for your happy birthday wishes and, you know, trip wishes.
Yes.
But today, moving on. It is super, super hot out, so I decided let's cover the coldest movie I know.
Yes. She predicted this months ago.
I can see the future. No, this movie is very cold. We're talking about Let the Right One In from 2008. Mm-hmm. And man, oh man.
Oh yeah, it's an interesting one.
It is an interesting one. Yeah, but it's a fun one.
It is a birthday pick too. Look at that.
This is I was gonna say my last one, but it's not.
No. We got one. Oh, also, listeners, we were gonna have a whole different plan for our last birthday pick here. We alluded to it at the end of last week's episode.
I'm sorry.
We did.
I know,
it wasn't you, but motherfucker. No. but please finish real quick. That's actually going to be
our season finale.
Yes, yeah. It's a lot of work we're putting into this one.
So. A ton.
So, yeah, we're going to save it. We're going to save it for the last episode of the season.
However, uh-huh. That does mean, Anthony,
uh-huh.
That we are switching what would have been our season finale.
Yes.
With that pick. So, next week, you're still getting a fantastic fucking film.
A film so good, we both agreed this has to be our season finale.
Immediately. Like, no questions asked.
Yeah. And it's one I didn't realize how much I wanted to write until I got into the mindset of doing it. I'm like, oh, right.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to do this for a long time.
I think we decided we wanted it to be our season finale independent of each other.
That's true.
And then we were just like, hey!
Yep. Anyways, back to the movie. What does IMDb say about this one, business aside?
Right. On IMDb, Let the Right One In, it's the whole thing is Oscar, an overlooked and bullied boy, finds love and revenge through Eli. However you want to say it. I can't do it with the Swedish or...
No, I can't.
A beautiful but peculiar girl. Oh, fuck. Okay.
Girl?
Yeah, girl, question mark? There's a story.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to talk about that. Trust me.
Written by...
Try it.
John...
Ajvid. That sounds...
Linguist.
Okay, the next one's easier.
Directed by Thomas Alfredson.
All right, now I realize there's going to be one typo in here you're going to see pretty consistently in the back half. I changed his name to Anderson throughout on accident.
Anderson?
Yeah, it's Alfredson. So if you see Anderson, it's Alfredson. Just so you listeners know.
We're
Yay.
A fucking mess. Okay.
Yeah.
Starring fuck me. Is it Carr?
Let's say Carr.
Okay, Hedbrandt, Lena, Leanderson.
Okay.
Per Ragnar.
That's a fucking cool name.
Ike Nord and Peter Carlberg.
All right, Pete. Most normal name of the batch. You know what's funny? These fuckers, the Swiss are so good at English. Like,
yeah.
Whenever I hear them speak English, I'm like, oh, okay, I can, you like nailed it.
The actress who plays Ellie,
mm-hmm.
Perfect English.
Yeah. Oh, the interviews, we're doing the research for this film.
Yeah.
Director, writer, everybody. Fantastic English. When we try to say any of their fucking names,
butchered. Oh,
terrible.
I'm a shitty, horrible, worst kind of American. I'm sorry.
I think most Americans cannot say some of these names. This is like a 99% thing.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, culturally, I don't know. They're good. And we're just like, not America. So we don't know.
That's the thing is, like, so many countries outside of America, like, insist on English being taught, like, in school as a second language. Like,
yeah.
Because it's, like, so necessary, quote unquote necessary,
mm-hmm.
Which it shouldn't be, but whatever.
Yeah. And here it's like, I think I'll take Spanish so I can order food places. Yeah.
Or it's like, I think I'll take Spanish because it's a requirement and then immediately forget it, you know?
That happened to me. That's me. Yeah. I know. I'm the worst Mexican. All right. I get it. Don't know Spanish. I know. Sorry, listeners.
Anyway, box office budget $29 million. Do you know what?
No, I don't.
Okay.
But what does that translate to in good old America money?
$4.5 million.
Hey, that's a pretty big budget.
Okay, and it came out January 26th, 2008.
All right.
And it earned $11.2 million.
There you go. See? Pretty successful.
Right.
Box office-wise, although culturally actually a lot more successful.
Oh, yeah.
Which of course, we're going to get into right now. So that was our attempt to get through those names. There'll be a lot more of them coming up.
I'm sorry.
So we're both going to have our turn at this. But obviously, you guys want to know the goods. How did we get this wonderful movie? Well, director Thomas Alfredson was not interested, actually, in adapting a novel initially. Then he read one about teenagers and vampires. No, not that one. The Swedish filmmaker had been in the industry for well over a decade, but the time he read... I'm going to do the name now. John Ajvide Lindqvist. Let the right one in. But he knew he wanted to be part of that adaptation and was dead set on getting the job. But there was a slight issue that he'd actually have to overcome here. Up until this point in his career, he had almost exclusively directed comedy films.
Okay. Yeah.
And dramas and stage plays. It's all comedy mixed with drama, but like mostly comedy.
Okay.
His father was legendary comedian, writer, director Hans Alfredson. A hugely popular Swedish celebrity that was consistently in the public eye of Swedish media.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. His career evolution from comedian to serious director propelled him to legend status within the country. Though this meant that he did not have as much time to spend with his children.
Okay, I read that as this meant that he didn't have to spend time with his children.
Oh, yeah, he just said, no. I'm paying all the bills here and you guys are getting press photos.
Mm-mm, done. Mm-mm.
Let me know when they graduate high school. This meant, of course, that director Thomas Alfredson was mostly raised by his mother. But he would participate in his father's summer productions just to get a little closer to him.
Aww.
I know. Thomas learned, however, how
is
to be
it
a
Thomas
great...
Thomas or Tomas?
Tomas. I have no idea.
I don't know. I'm just asking. I just want to bug you.
Tomas. learned how to be a great filmmaker through, of course, these experiences. And, oh, we're going to keep switching it over, watch. And
Tomas.
had a legitimately good career, but taking such a departure away from how he established himself was very risky. And this, of course, would be his first horror film. And a lot of other directors were knocking at the novelist's door to get a shot at adapting this particular book because the book itself was quite a hit.
It was popular.
Very popular. Let the Right One In really spoke to Alfredson, though. And particularly the bullying aspect as, quote, "It's very hard and very down to earth. Unsentimental. I had some period when I grew up when I had hard times at school. So it really shook me." End quote.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I think, I'm like, I don't think I know anyone who wasn't bullied in, like, middle school. And I'm like, oh, that's because we were all bullied. If you weren't, that means you were probably bullying someone.
Yeah. I think I had... You ever see 30 Rock?
No.
There's
I've seen, like, the memes, but...
There's a moment when she goes back to high school and... In her mind, she was, like, getting picked on. She was a fucking nerd. Like, she was, like, oh, this pathetic little thing. And everybody just dug on. It was horrible. And then she goes to high school, and everybody was like, we were afraid of you. You were so mean. And they do flashbacks of the same scenes, and it's just her being a bitch to everybody, but still being nerdy and fucking weird. I feel like that was me. I do feel like that was
you
me.
You had a ton of friends, though.
I mean, yeah, I had a good amount of friends. But that, also, there were definitely bullies.
I mean, yeah.
But actually, mostly not in high school. It was mostly middle school.
Yeah,
mostly
I think, yeah. In middle school, you were just an asshole?
No.
I mean, most middle schoolers are assholes.
Probably. But I think I was more of an asshole in high school.
Oh.
Yeah, I think so. But not knowingly. In my mind, I was this depressed little, like, meh, everything sucks. And
Little fucking edgelord.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I probably deserved a couple of little strikes going my way, but... I don't know. I think middle school taught me how to talk my way out of it.
It set you up for a career in comedy.
It really did. You know, you got to stay on it. The threat of physical violence really is a good motivator sometimes.
The little tiny, like, I've never fought a day in my life fists that Anthony just made were very...
No, that was my, like pleading fist
right there. As you fall...
Please don't hurt me.
As you fall to your knees, just like, please.
The threat of physical violence is very motivating. But this movie did capture the worst of the bullying era
yes.
really, really well, I gotta say. Like down to like the bloody injuries.
Oof, yeah.
Like oof. Oof.
The switch to the face
mm-hmm.
was brutal.
But of course, Tomas eventually did get a meeting with the author, and they both knew right away that they had the same idea for the film, along with, of course, producer John Nordling, who busted his motherfucking ass to get the adaptation rights. He badly wanted to make this film. So, on the experience, actually, Nordling says, quote, unquote, at Ordfront, they just laughed when I called. I was like the 48th person that they had put on the list. But I called John Adjivide Lindquist. I'm going to call him John. And it turned out we had the same idea of what kind of film we should make. It wasn't about money. It was about the right constellation.
Aww.
Yeah. He really wanted to make it like a good film.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this director valued the fuck out of his work.
Totally.
Which we're going to talk about right now for sure. So.
Yeah.
Senorita Webster, what's
up? Yeah. There was one stipulation to allowing Lindquist Let the Right One In and receive a film adaptation. The author wanted to write it himself.
Usually not the best idea, so interesting.
Usually not the best. Mm-hmm. Alfredson was apprehensive at first, but since he was so new to horror, he decided to let the author try his hand.
Yeah, this is definitely a moment from what I've read. It was like, okay, he knows the rules, and I don't know shit. So
I'm just going to let this guy do all the heavy lifting.
You do the framework, I'll cut where you need to cut. How about that? Yeah.
Lindquist was surprisingly not a purist, making some major revisions. Many minor characters were removed completely, allowing the film to focus primarily on Ellie and Oscar's relationship. Oh, and there was a pedophilia plotline?
Yeah, pretty big thing to omit.
To just, like, we're just gonna accent out of there.
You know what, though? The usual problem that comes with having an author to do their own work is they're usually very much a purist.
Right.
Yeah, they kind of overdo it.
It's one of those things where it's like, no, this character who is seen for 2 seconds in the background, like, it must be there for this reason.
This is clearly important. Yeah, that's Dobby's uncle, and he is a big thing that creates... Yeah.
Fuck you, J.K. Rowling.
I'm not seriously.
Anyway, I'm not getting on this soapbox. I'm not doing it.
Don't do it.
You started this. Anyway. In the book, the character of... Haken solicits a young male prostitute and even stalks a young girl into the woods. Him and Ellie's relationship is much more transactional in the book, considering her character is trapped at a very specific age. Mm-hmm. But Lindquist felt general audiences would not be able to handle something that dark. So Haken was written to be more of a long-term companion.
Do you like how, to calm down from talking about J.K. Rowling, you went straight to the pedophilia adaptation?
You know what? Yes.
Yeah, that was easier to talk
about.
That was easier
and less immediately rage-consuming, even though I am immediately filled with rage.
It really changes the character, too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like, although, I did... Although... I still got the vibes.
Still... Almost, like, alluded to in some ways, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely got the vibes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But obviously it's a lot more on the nose in the source material.
Oh, okay. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, that makes sense. But I think, I don't know, I still think they managed to weasel its way into the...
Yeah, definitely. Just with the acting, really.
Yeah, right. Ellie's gender and backstory are also much more specific in the book, whereas it's far more ambiguous in the movie. The book describes Ellie as an androgynous boy, castrated centuries before by a sadistic vampire nobleman. The movie avoids the backstory entirely, and Ellie was even dubbed as actress Lena Leanderson's natural voice was too high-pitched.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought that was interesting, because I was kind of curious how they did that.
Yeah, that's a good creative decision, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was actually a decision the director, Alfredson, made, since the script did contain some backstory elements, but they ended up getting cut due to pacing issues. So
yeah.
I mean, they were just like, eh.
Again, back to... Normally, I actually really like backstory, but, I mean, for this particular movie, that makes sense.
It doesn't feel necessary, in my opinion.
Yeah, unlike Half-Blood Prince, when they cut out half of the goddamn Voldemort backstory, I was so mad.
Now you're just fishing.
Yeah. But they did, though!
You're fishing. fishing.
Bring back the Gaunt storyline. Okay, what's the story?
You know what? I'm not going to do this because I can talk about my Harry Potter nerd days. Do you want me to do that? Because I'll do it.
Yeah, it's your birthday.
Fuck you, Anthony. Because the backstory and side characters were cut down completely, the body count and gore were also substantially cut. So the film needed some damn good leads to carry it. And the filmmakers did take this part of the process super seriously.
Oh, very, very, very seriously. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you can think about it, you're spending almost 100% of the film with these two characters.
Almost, yeah. I mean, yeah. Everyone...
One or the other.
Everyone is an auxiliary character.
Yes, yeah. Even in the book, obviously, there's actually a lot more going on. But for this, you know, fucking Alfredson, he's a talented boy. So the casting process took actually around an entire year. Searching all over Sweden for the right actors to portray Ellie, Eli, and Oscar. Alfredson, see, I fucked it up right there, described it as the hardest part of the entire process. Leanderson responded to an online ad that simply asked for a 12-year-old girl who was good at running. So naturally, she sped her way through the audition process. After 3 rounds, she was in. I knew it.
Fucking hate you.
Hildebrandt got the role through an open audition at his school, though it is unconfirmed if being a good runner was a requirement.
I mean, yeah, you know what?
That's just a bonus. That's just sure. Yeah.
I just also love, like, that is the sketchiest ad I've ever heard. An online ad that just simply, I just need a 12-year-old girl that's good at running. Like, that does, like, that would never fly in the year of our Lord 2021. Oh, no.
For what? Called out.
Call to find out, yep. Winky face. Like, suspicious.
Horrible. So, Alfredson. Still had his concerns despite settling on two actors for the roles, but was pleasantly surprised by how intelligent they were and how much they made the characters their own. So when filmmaking finally began, they needed somewhere that would stay cold for the entire duration of the shoot, so they went to the northern coastal city of Luleå, Sweden's 25th largest city.
Oh, 25th?
Yeah, 25th in all of Sweden.
Mm-hmm. Hold on 1 second.
You want to see how big number one is?
No, 25th.
Oh, largest American city? Yep. Oh, that's so interesting. What is it?
Hold on. Detroit.
Wow. That's number 25?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. I've been there. It's pretty big.
I mean.
It's pretty big. Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
But, New York City is number one. Los Angeles is number two. We've known this.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah.
So, you know what I mean?
So I've been to number one, number two, number 25. Yeah.
You've been to Chicago?
I've had a layover in Chicago.
Okay, you haven't been there. If you don't leave the airport, you're still in liminal space. You know
I could
what I
mean? See outside the window.
Have you been to Houston?
Yes.
Okay, so you've been to the 4th.
Okay.
Phoenix?
Only layover.
Okay, doesn't count. Doesn't Philadelphia? Count.
Nope.
San Antonio?
Oh, I'm not sure.
8, I know you have. San Diego?
Yep, that's right.
All right, we can do this.
We can keep going. Yeah, we're going to keep going. So when it comes to the actual filmmaking process, there were a couple of interesting bits to work with. So the scene where multiple cats attack Virginia.
Oh, shit.
What happened?
25th largest city. I gave you the 24th. It wasn't Detroit. It was Las Vegas.
Oh, been there too. Hey.
I've never been to Vegas.
You've never been to Vegas?
I've never been to Vegas.
Oh, I've been so many times.
I want to go, but...
Wow, that's actually a big disparity. I feel like Detroit was much bigger than Vegas, actually.
No.
I mean, probably by just buildings and, like...
I mean, by buildings, sure, but the...
population?
The only real difference is, like, by, like, less than 3,000.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah. That can turn out any fucking... No, it's Detroit. That's just declining. Okay.
It's true. Detroit is going down. Mm-hmm. Las Vegas is going up, according to the statistics. I am sorry.
No, let's find out about the Sweden cities. How about no?
Right,
right. And I want to compare that to Sweden.
Yeah, compared to Sweden.
So the I almost threw the water down.
That's fine. I was gonna say, please, Omar, don't do this to me.
But of course, the scene where multiple cats actually attack Virginia was one of the most complicated to film, consisting of lots of cuts and even some CG, which was mostly used in big budget films at the time. For something
this seems
small.
Like a big budget.
Huh? $4.5 million?
Oh, that's tiny.
No,
okay.
Yeah, to UCG. CG's like $4.5 million a fucking minute now.
Right.
Yeah. But of course, CG was actually used pretty sparingly in the film, with only 50 total special effect shots overall. They used it, but not a lot, and it was mostly to obscure things. And, okay. Like, it was subtle.
Yeah, those cat scene, I was very like, oh, wow, okay.
Very well done.
Yeah.
Like, really well done. There were actually also no handheld shots in this film, no rapid cuts, no Steadicam, hell, even no roofs on many of the sets, just so the crew could have complete freedom when lighting this bitch.
Wow.
Yeah, so Let the Right One In was shot more like an art house film than any traditional horror film at the time. And, of course, this came from comedy director.
We've said this time and time again. The jump from comedy to horror is like, it's a baby jump. It's a hop and a skip.
Well, I feel like if you need to have, again, we said this before, the ability to make people laugh, I think is pretty adaptable. You're manipulating emotion. You're trying to get emotion out, essentially. And I think that translates really well to horror because a lot of what makes people laugh is kind of shock.
Yeah. Oh, or like nervousness.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like a tone that you can probably figure out.
No, shock, I think, is a better way. You're right.
Yeah, you can figure it out if you microwave a horror, probably. I assume. I mean, considering the amount of comedy directors and horror overlap there is.
Yeah, or considering how many horror lovers also love comedy.
Yep, that's true. And how they're also both very, very, very much disregarded by the Academy Awards. Yeah, yeah, right?
But, you know, yeah. We're not bitter.
No, we're not at all. So, audiences... how actually do you think audiences react to this unconventional film from a country not exactly known for their horror offerings, Alex?
I mean, there's only one way to find out.
Is there? that's kind of what we do, huh?
Right. Yeah. Despite what, you know, this clusterfuck has turned into. Let the Right One In is... You know, it's pretty much swept the film festival circuit.
Yeah.
You know. And not just the ones in Sweden, although there were plenty of those. We were ready to list the festivals where it took top honors in, but it much like me going through the list of the top 25 cities in America, it's just too damn long.
Yeah, exactly. We've already had one list today. It's fine.
Right. Just go look at Wikipedia. So the official premiere in Sweden was delayed to fall, since that's typically when films have longer runs in the country, and they knew this one was going to be a hit. It just so happens that international audiences loved this movie too.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. To summarize how critics all over the world felt about the film, we'll direct you to Roger Ebert's 3.5-star review, saying, quote, "Let the Right One In is a vampire movie, quote unquote, but not even remotely what we mean by that term. It is deadly grim. It takes vampires as seriously as the versions of Nosferatu by Murnau and Herzog. Herzog, thank you. I know his name. Herzog do. And that is very serious indeed. It is also a painful portrayal of an urgent relationship between two 12-year-olds on the brink of adolescence. It is not intended for 12-year-olds.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not.
No. For a more contemporary take, we have Annalie Schafranken. Franken?
That's accurate enough to me.
her review for Bitch Media, which calls Let the Right One In, quote, "my favorite Swedish import." Oh, and a bunch of Letterboxd reviews,
guess. Yeah, we have official sources and Letterboxd. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's
fine. So Let the Right One In has a solid 4-star rating out of 6,300 reviews on Letterboxd. One of the few 4s so far on this podcast from Letterboxd.
Not common.
No.
Not common.
Lucy writes in her 5-star review, quote, "cool how this is one of the best love stories ever shown on film," unquote.
Love and revenge, okay.
I mean, I agree with that. But Griffin says in their 4-star review, quote, "the parts where Ellie's face changes ever so slightly are some of the most well-done, shiver-inducing scenes I've seen in a minute. Probably the best vampire movie," unquote. Interesting.
Okay.
Jay says in their 5-star review, quote, "do not let her in. Understand me, just ignore her," unquote. Fisherman John goes to provide the lowest score we could find with 3.5 stars, though still praises the film by saying, quote, By far my favorite vampire-themed film, even though it's more about love and learning how to stand up for yourself, we Swedes have some great films for sure, !
Yeah, it was really hard to find, like, a bad review on this one.
Can you filter on Letterboxd by, like, lowest review? I'm sure, yeah.
There maybe. It didn't seem worth it, though. Like, honestly, it just, there was a lot of fives.
Really?
There's, like, a lot of fives. Yeah, like, a lot of fives. Oh, you gotta find out now.
I have to know, but you can keep going. I'll come back with an update.
There's gonna be ones. Don't worry.
I'm sure. I mean, there has to be.
Like, no fucking tits.
Right. This movie said it was gonna be about vampires, and it just seemed really stupid. No stars.
It's about love, and nobody loves me, so I don't see why these people love each other.
I have no artistic vision.
Oh.
I hate fun.
That's pretty good. That's how I read them, too. Let the Ride One In would go on to earn double its budget, which was fine. But the rewards and acclaim were actually what really propelled the film to classic status. So Thomas Alfredson would use this film as a chance to expand past the Swedish film industry and cross over into Hollywood. Immediately, studio execs asked him to adapt the remake as well. But he promptly, you guessed it, turn their asses down. And on this, he states, quote, I am too old to make the same film twice, and I have other stories that I want to tell. I think that it is a little sad. I wish that American viewers would just see the foreign language version. When I first got asked about the remake, I said, can you not just get everyone to see this one? It is a perfectly good film, you know?
Have you been to America?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to read these people's names because I don't care. Half Star, terrible. One of the weirdest, most boring movies I've ever seen. Another one. I did not like it. Nope. You know what? I'm not going to torture myself. I tried to watch this movie several times and I can't finish it. It's boring and slow and cold to look at the town it takes place in. Not as
I live in Hawaii. I don't like to see anything outside my fucking zone.
Right.
Who does not like paradise? Oh wow, they get pretty nasty, huh?
Yeah, they like people who did not like this movie did not like this movie, which I understand. It is not for everyone, but also like artistically very well done. But whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry.
Mm-hmm. I like the Swedish import one from Bitch Media.
Yeah, the Swedish import. It's funny, but also going back to what you were saying, what like the quote you just read. That's my whole thing with every foreign film that ends up getting remade into an American one. I'm just like, really, guys? You couldn't have just, like, just turned on subtitles and dealt with that for...
Hell, even take the dub? It's not that bad. I mean, it keeps the fundamental story in there.
Right.
You get that experience.
If dubs make it, you know... If they will watch dubs, if that is the only way they'll watch a movie, I will tolerate it. Even though... It just goes against everything I'm about.
Oh, that's funny.
Read the subtitles.
Yeah, I watched Martyrs dubbed. And it kind of gave it a weird kind of vibe to it, but I was
you watched it dubbed?
I did. I watched it dubbed.
That's weird.
Yeah. Still terrifying. Still fucking terrifying.
Yeah, thanks for everyone who messaged us and was just like, hey, I watched this movie and what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
It made me really happy.
I had to keep warning people. They're like, I'm gonna watch it. I'm like, oh, okay. Don't watch around children or your family. Just make it a solo thing. Just make
it's
it a solo.
It's experience.
A solo experience, absolutely. But of course, Alfredson's next film, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, would earn him a huge amount of awards as well, being critically and commercially successful. His follow-up would arrive 7 years later in the form of The Snowman, starring Michael Shannon. It flopped pretty bad and only received 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. He has since returned to the Swedish film industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Snowman.
Yeah, it's the one about... Well, who's the hitman?
Kuklinski.
Kuklinski, yeah, yeah.
He made that movie?
He made that one.
That horrible fucking movie?
He did. He made the bad movie.
That's really funny. That's really fucking funny.
Yeah, pretty fucked up. Mm-hmm. Poor bastard. I don't know what the circumstance behind that one is. We'll probably never cover it because this is the horror, you know, podcast.
Yeah, if you ever want to listen to the Richard... is that his first name, Richard?
I have no idea.
I think it's Richard. Yeah. Kuklinski. Last podcast from the left did a series on him, and they mentioned this movie at length, which is the only reason I know what it is.
Yeah. That's where I got it from, too, yeah.
Michael Shannon.
Poor Alfredson, man. He really thought he was on a... He was on a roll?
I mean, he was on a roll.
He was on a roll.
But he was also... I mean, it happens.
Yeah, yeah. I
mean, but also, what can you do? You let one flop get you down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, recent flop and then COVID, so...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, unfortunately. He does have a movie, I think, out in Sweden now that I think did okay. So
good. I mean, that's all that matters.
Exactly. I'm sure he's got more ideas, too.
I mean, in your opinion, Guillermo del Toro did Crimson Peak, and you still like him as a director.
Precisely. See, exactly that. Although Crimson Peak, not 7%.
No.
Yeah.
And also, it's a good movie. Yeah.
Very artfully done. I just don't like it. It's fine.
It's a good movie.
It's okay.
And you should like it.
The American remake would eventually come out titled Let Me In instead. And of course, directed by Cloverfield's own Matt Reeves. By the way, did you know we covered Cloverfield, Alex?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, we did. Like a whole year ago. It was crazy.
Holy shit, over a year ago.
That's right. Monster May 2020, bitches. A different time. Anyway, this is...
God, Monster May was such a simpler time.
It was.
Although we were in the middle of, like, the, like, worst of quarantine, where I was just afraid to, like, step outside for more than 2 seconds.
Yeah, but by simpler, we were beaten into submission of just staying in our homes and not really being able to do much. See?
It's true.
So, there you go. It's less simple now. We got our lives back. It's fucking insane.
Yeah. I flew back from New York on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I had work and recording. So, Tuesday, back in California. Mm-hmm. Wednesday, recording. Thursday, recording. Friday, my coworkers are taking me out for my birthday.
Oh boy. Saturday, sleep.
No. Oh, fuck. I forgot.
What are you doing
Friday? Friday night after going out to drinks with my coworkers, driving to San Diego because it's my mom's birthday.
Oh, shit. You are going to need some good old hangover remedies. Fun times.
Drugs!
Oh, but, you know, let the right one, or no, let me
no,
in.
Let me in.
Actually, it got good reviews, but audiences did not feel the same way, and it is very much considered a financial disappointment.
Good.
Yeah. However, you know, Reeves would end up working on the Planet of the Apes series and, you know, the newest Batman, so I think he did okay for himself.
He's working on the newest Batman?
Yeah, with Robert Pattinson.
Oh, the Batman.
The Batman.
Oh, he's directing that?
He's directing it.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
And we do like Matt Reeves from previous stuff we've talked about.
From Cloverfield?
Cloverfield, yeah.
I did like Cloverfield.
Mm-hmm. Also, but as of right now, you know, and after a few failed starts, it looks like the adaptation... But as of right now, and after actually a few failed starts, it looks like the next adaptation of Let the Right One In... will be a TV series on Showtime. Whether it will be able to capture the magic of the original film is, of course, left to be determined. But...
Probably not.
Yeah, we doubt it. Of course, it's not going to be able to hit those Letterbox numbers. So how about some discussion about this one?
Let's talk about this one.
This one's pretty good. So, with all that, though, Miss Alex Webster, it's your birth month. How do you feel about Let the Right One In from 2008?
Okay, so I picked it. So obviously, like, it is something I enjoy, mm-hmm. right? I picked this movie because it also was something that came highly recommended to me, and then I put it on my October movies I had never seen horror extravaganza. I need to come up with a better name for this, but you know, the thing that I reference all the time that I did that this past October,
because horror movie good marathon. Mm-hmm.
I love horror movies. The
me like scary marathon. Nah, that's a good one. You know you're going to use it.
No, I will not. That does remind me of the I Like Scary Movies installation, which I think about often and miss.
Oh, yeah. That was a cool one.
That was very cool. You went like twice.
No, I only went once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wanted to go so bad. Anyway. Yeah, so that was the first time I watched it, and I like... It was one of those movies that immediately after I needed to find like a visual essay on,
mm-hmm.
you know that. But yeah, I did really enjoy it. The one thing that does suck, and I think I shot myself in the foot, mm-hmm. is, and I'm very glad we didn't record yesterday when the day I flew back.
Yeah.
But watching it while I was severely jet lagged, I was like, I know that this is what happens. And it was just like a little bit rougher. I don't know, mm-hmm. like just like as like a second watch, it made it rougher. Cause like the first time I watched it, I was just like mind blown.
Yeah.
But I also love like horror movies that have like a little like weird romance to it.
That's true.
Like in this movie, like even like take characters aside, like there is a romantic feel to it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, like it's like whimsical and romantic, and I like, again, not in like the literal sense, like in the like literary sense romantic.
Yeah, that weird, very unusual combination of bloody as fuck and whimsical.
Yeah.
Not common.
No.
Not common.
No, and I do think this movie is super Swedish and mm-hmm. very
it's very culturally switched. Like you can feel it in like just the way every character lives their lives in this film.
Yes, and just like seeing like the apartments, the schools, mm-hmm. how things like happened, the clothes. Like I don't know if this was supposed to happen in the past or like.
Yeah, I believe it's set in the '80s.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, you can tell by the mm-hmm. clothes.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was, I don't know, it was just very, it was nice. I enjoyed it.
Oh, I agree.
What were your thoughts?
Okay, so I really like this film. I do. I very like it. I saw it a long time. My history with this is actually, I saw it back in the days when Netflix did the DVDs. This is one of the first ones because I was...
You mentioned that at the end of last week's episode.
Yeah, yeah. I really was getting like deep into my film like enthusiasm around that time. Because mm-hmm. I started watching more indie movies in theaters. And like it was one of those things. This I didn't get to watch in theaters, but I remember it was probably one of the... I signed up for Reddit in 2008. So it might have been one of the first discussion threads I looked at.
Aww.
Was, yeah. Everybody's like, oh, this movie's so fucking cool. And
or like, oh, this movie's so fucking weird.
Mm-hmm. Oh, damn, been on Reddit for 12 years. But anyways, so yeah, a lot of life.
Longer. Because this is January of 2008.
Oh, yeah.
So it's probably closer
13
to...
13 years.
Yeah, closer to 13.
Fucking A. Yeah, 13 years. Jesus. But the way people were talking about it, I had to seek it out. And mm-hmm. I loved it, like, when I first saw it. I thought this was so, like, you know, my film brain was being developed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God, they don't make movies like this in America, blah, 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 blah.
That is a fun feeling where you're just like, why don't we have any movies like this? Because they take those movies and turn them into American adaptations that suck ass.
Yep, indeed. But, you know... now, I've caught it here and there over the years, but I never actually got to see it all the way through again. It was always pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched it again this time, and despite it's a good movie. It's really, really good. I like it a lot. However.
Ooh, there's a however.
The first hour is so badly paced.
Oh, my God.
It really is.
Yeah, like it's rough.
I understand the art house nature of it.
Sure.
I understand the story they're trying to tell. Like, I really do. It's a mesmerizing film when it wants to be. And it really wants to be in the last half hour. but there are times it was hard to not pick up the phone.
I mean, I love... Yeah, yeah, totally. And which is hard because this is not an English language film.
Yes, so you have to pay attention.
So it's kind of like you have to pay attention if you want to know a lick of what's going on.
Well, yeah, you look down for a fucking second. You're like, hold on a second. What's he doing with those fucking bodies?
Right. Yeah. Right. Or it's just like, oh, I've missed something.
Exactly.
Because it does kind of travel quite seamlessly between Oscar and Ellie's.
Yes.
Like lives, which is kind of, which I think is cool because they're neighbors, but it's interesting. Yeah, I agree. It was like, it, again, I didn't know if this was me shooting myself in the foot because I was jet lagged to hell, but yeah, it was rough. The first hour, I was just like, no eyes on the
look
TV. Mm-hmm. Like, you, like, I know you're tired, but pay attention.
Yeah, they're staring at each other. It's a beautiful moment. It's just right. Oh, wow, it keeps going. Okay.
Wow. It's just like, okay, we get it.
You get it. You like them. All right, let's go.
Let's move it on. Like, yeah. Agreed.
But, I mean, again, despite my like, honestly, it's like The Witch. It's in the same ballpark as The Witch, where I'm
ooh,
like,
okay.
Where like, okay, I get it. The pacing can be like the 90 minutes can feel like the rest of your natural life. Like, it really, really can.
That's true. If someone really likes that feeling, because there are some people I know who do like this feeling.
Yeah, the super slow burns.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. Might I recommend another A24 film? The Black Coat's Daughter.
Never seen it.
It is I really thought I was going to last the rest of my natural born life. Like, I was just like, oh my God.
Oh, the old A24 special. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
But this is one of, like, their earlier movies, too. Mm. So, or, like, earlier, like, horror films.
They're really establishing themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, where is that streaming anywhere?
Last I checked, it was on Netflix.
I might have some do-it-myself viewing that. That sounds fun.
I mean, sure, you can. It was directed by Anthony Perkins' son.
Cool.
Yes. Okay. This is his directorial debut, and we've mentioned him before, but yeah.
I can dig it. Uh-huh. I can dig it. All right. But relating back to that, sure. This falls in the same line. Brilliant movie.
Just paced a slow so oddly. Burn. Just,
yeah.
Well,
but it hits you with like some really good shit. Like that's the thing.
If you are wide awake and this is the kind of movie that you enjoy, mm-hmm. you will enjoy it because mm-hmm. it is like when I watched it originally, like I was in the mood for a foreign language film.
Yeah.
I was like in the zone, like vampires. I was like, fuck yeah, let's do this.
And in that context, it's mind blowing.
And yeah, when you have the attention span to sit there and like give it your undivided attention and like be present,
yeah,
it's great. This is not a movie you can half heartedly watch.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it's absolutely worth the watch though. Especially if you haven't seen it yet, you're going to be captivated.
Mm-hmm.
It's just if you've seen it the second run though. It's a little tougher.
It is. And that was something I wanted to bring up because I wasn't sure if it was like that for you because this was my second watch.
Well, the mystery's gone at that
point.
That's
fair.
Yeah. And part of the relationship, the cool thing is seeing it develop and not knowing how it's going to develop. Mm-hmm. But once you kind of know what the end game is, like there's definitely some tracking stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he did the, he's like, oh, I'll cut my hand and we'll become blood. I don't pack
know.
Or whatever
it'll become a blood pack, which is weird, but sure, you little.
That's a very 80s thing.
I mean,
it's a very 80s thing.
Sure, it's also a 12-year-old thing.
Yeah, that's true. But like her going crazy and like, I need you to fucking go.
Yeah,
like scenes like that are captivating.
Very tense. Yeah, yeah.
But and then not, you know, not knowing that they're gonna be okay at the end. That's something that's like, holy shit,
yeah,
where is this
going
to go? Yeah,
the scene where the guy breaks in and like tries and like basically goes into where Ellie is like sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm just like, oh God.
Fucking idiot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's again, great film. Pacing on your second run might be a little different, but if you haven't seen it before, fucking watch it. Like just watch it. It's mm-hmm. very, very good.
It is still a good second watch, which yeah, I don't want our review to dissuade anyone, but mm-hmm, it exactly. is, it's still good.
100%.
Yes. I was just severely jet lagged.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I'm me.
So. Yeah, he has the attention span of a goldfish.
Yeah, I can barely pay attention right now. So, actually, your cats are mesmerizing me.
Drugs!
So, how do you feel about the way this movie handles vampire tropes versus their portrayal in more mainstream media?
I loved it.
Isn't it fucking awesome?
It's great.
I really loved it.
Like, you still have all of the classic tropes that are still kind of, like, you know, you have to be invited in, the mm-hmm. sunlight thing. Which, by the way, I love a spontaneous combustion in a film. Between this and Hereditary, I was just like, oh, this is good.
Oh my
gosh. Love seeing someone just burst into flame.
Filmed so well,
it was,
too.
Like, one of the most, like evocative shots. Like, mm-hmm. it was just aesthetically, like, I don't know what it was. I might just have a thing for seeing people be burst into flame.
You know this actress's character, Virginia, got all the CG. All the CG was mm-hmm. essentially like, okay, a bunch of cats gonna fuck you up.
And
you're
gonna... we're gonna set you on fire.
Yes. She got it real bad.
Honestly, she got the short end of the fucking stick in this movie.
She did, but you know what? Also, with that very, very, very good grounded execution of a vampire trope.
Yes. And you know what was great?
Hmm.
Another great CG? The guy whose face was burned off with acid. I missed that in the first one.
I think I missed that also because I was surprised. I was like, oh shit.
I must have missed it in the first one, or they might have, I don't know if they added it, but yeah, when I saw it this time, I was like, oh God, I mm-hmm. missed this. This is disgusting.
Oh, on the way the body just falls down. Ah, and just very organic looking, just thud.
Good.
Just fucking thud.
Good organic death. And like, and I think that's one of the things that I enjoy about foreign film in general mm-hmm. is just, like, it doesn't have the super sensationalized Hollywood, like, going down in a rain of bullets type death.
Oh, no, they respect their audience.
Which I'm not used to. I'm not used to being respected as an audience member.
Yeah, yeah. I'm used to having to filter through, like, oh, that was actually pretty smart. Among the popcorn and candy that is on screen.
Right, and I'm also used to just, like, Hollywood just, like, grabbing me by the hair and being like, you're gonna like this, and force-feeding me everything I need to know about the movie. Like,
Harry's only powerful because he has friends. Voldemort doesn't have any friends, and he has love in his heart.
Yes. There's a lot to... I could just wring your little neck, Anthony. I could just...
What? But see, they just ram it down your throats
and
there.
And it's just like the power of friendship. Yeah. Like, come on.
You're the bad guy because you don't know what love is.
Yeah. Okay. Has nothing to do with the fact that you're a wizard Nazi. But...
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Wizard Nazi. That's very true.
But sure.
Oh, boy. But back to the tropes here.
Thank you.
I think the lack of glamorization is a really, really big benefit to this film. Mm-hmm. And it really does not pull its punches with how a vampire is supposed to actually live. Down to the familiars, down to bloodiness.
The
blood curdling.
The gore.
Like, ah.
There's also something that's very interesting that I liked about this, is that this particular vampire, like, lives in relative poverty.
Mm-hmm. You'd think after the amount of time they've been alive, they'd be able to figure out.
Well, technically she does. Like, she could, like, you know, do whatever she wanted. She just chooses not to because it's easier.
Yeah.
But it goes against, like, that very common trope of, like, the old rich vampire.
Oh, definitely.
You know,
definitely,
like...
Definitely, yeah.
Because, like... Ellie is an old, rich vampire, but isn't, like, dressed to the nines.
No.
You know? Isn't Gary Oldman on the side of the street, you know?
And also, I think they make a point to say that her mind is still 12.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's still... She's just essentially going to be that age forever. Forever in the best way. And obviously, she's smarter. She has years of experience, but she's
still
12.
It's not an Interview with the Vampire where Kirsten Dunst's character has the body of a child, but mentally is like, I've been alive forever.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, good one. That's a good reference right there.
Thank you.
Yeah. But no, I mean, like, but even with that, like, that's a cool way of tackling the trope. That's a very cool way of tackling the trope. Like, oh, no. She is, in her heart, fundamentally mm-hmm. that age.
Yeah.
And that's why it's like, isn't this now a burden?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that kind of fucks up vampirism, like, on a pretty fundamental level.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is very cool. It's a good take on the genre.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think that's why so many people kind of praise this movie as being such a great vampire film.
I agree. One of the best, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, considering its time period and how big it was when it came out and what else was around, what distinguishes this film from others in its era?
Oh,
so, like,
gosh.
The 2008, definitely almost peak Saw, like, was it transitional from torture porn to found footage, this particular era of horror?
Right. Okay. Let's discuss. Okay. In terms of what was going on in America, one missed call, The Happening, The Strangers, Martyrs? Yeah. 2008.
Yeah. That was French, but yeah.
Yeah, the French one. I mean, even then, but
oh,
like,
right. Still horror in 2008.
Yeah. Like Mungo, Prom Night, Let the Right One In, like Death Bell, The Eye, Cloverfield, Thanksgiving, Great.
Hey, Thanksgiving, huh?
Shut up.
Isn't that, huh?
Saw 5.
Saw 5. That's why I stopped watching.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that's exactly the one. I'm like, fuck that. I'm not going to the theater.
So what we had, based off of my brief...
Also, 1 year away from the Friday the 13th remake.
Yeah.
1 year away.
Oh, 2009.
And Paranormal Activity, 1 year away from that.
Yeah.
Although technically still in the circuit.
Although 2008 did bring us Repo the Genetic Opera, so...
Something we might have to cover on this podcast.
Is a horror musical, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm surprised that hasn't come up yet.
We've
never said the word on here.
I've a horror musical?
No, no.
Repo the Genetic Opera. No, we have to cover it because there's a lot to love about it. Mostly, like, one of the best parts is Paris Hilton singing in, like, leather. Like,
well, on the schedule for next season. Let's go.
No, it's, like, truly, it is just, it's great. It is a horror musical, and it marries two things that I enjoy. Anyway, going back to my original thought, in 2008, we had a lot of very dark, very gory films.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and this is just my opinion, this movie was probably super fucking refreshing.
Oh, yes.
In the sense that it was very artfully done, but still had that level of gore that people weren't completely like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. Not sensationalized, though. In a way, a lot of the films on that list sensationalized it.
Totally.
Despite Martyrs, which totally grounded it also. I mean, and that's kind of why it lasts.
That's also not an American film.
Yep, exactly.
So, yeah. I mean, The Ruins came out this year. Like, I mean, some really gruesome shit.
Oh, Midnight, The Ruins was so good. Yeah,
The Midnight Meat Train came out this year.
I hadn't seen that one yet.
I mean, it keeps being suggested.
We're already making a list right here. You know what we got? Next theme, next year? 2008 month.
Honestly?
Not bad, huh?
Not a bad idea. Because there is a lot that came out this year.
2008 and 2022, how about that? Ooh, might have gave it away.
Pontypool even came. Oh god, I liked Pontypool too.
Wow.
This sucks.
Yeah.
This sucks. Okay.
Okay, see, so 2008, we're going to go ahead and say it right here, probably a pretty good year for horror films. And,
well, it's not a good year, but it is, I would say, a defining year.
A defining year. You know what? This, honestly, it's in the height of the torture porn remake era.
Yes. But
you're also on the cusp of found footage.
Okay. Do you remember, and for anyone who's listening, thank you for bearing with us, but do you remember, I talked about this many, many, many episodes ago, From Within, that movie that I saw, that everyone, that I saw on Sci-Fi that one night when I was growing up, it was like one of the first horror movies I ever saw. I stumbled across it and it was so scary that I did not tell my mom that I had watched it because I was worried she was going to get mad at me for watching a scary movie. Yeah, we're probably going to cover it at some point, but it ended with everyone killing themselves.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
That also came out in 2008.
Damn.
So, good year.
Yeah, yeah, really not a bad year.
Good year.
But I think you're right in that it is a very fundamental year kind of in the genre.
Yeah.
And Let the Right One In really cements itself among a huge variety of films. Because honestly, we're between eras. Like, we really are.
Yes.
But this one kind of ushered in the new one. I think the slow burn style horror that A24 would adapt
would eventually just make as their trademark. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. This is kind of the beginnings of that. This is a show that there's an audience for, and there's one across the world, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah. Wow. All right, we did good.
Good job, us.
Hey. However, you know, I'll knock you to that front. This film is often not considered in the horror genre for the most part, but more so a drama with horror elements. Do you think there's any merit to that?
Sure, I can see that.
You can kind of see it too a little bit.
Like, the it is a drama horror film. I don't know what order to place to put these genres together, but it definitely is also a drama film. Like, if someone called this a drama film, I would be like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I would
like
say
a drama coming of age kind of fucking film.
Yeah,
yeah.
The horror elements I feel are more of a vehicle than like a defining factor. Does that make sense?
Despite it being set in the rules of like vampirism,
right,
and stuff like that.
But it's used as, you know, a vehicle.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it really heightens, I think, the dramatic aspects, and it's also, I think, what makes it accessible. It's having the horror elements allow people who wouldn't normally watch such a sentimental tale. It gives them stuff sprinkled in, and then really in the last half hour, like, pushes you into the genre while settling the emotional things that are happening between the characters.
I think it does great things for both genres, because I think it invites in horror fans who normally wouldn't watch a lot of dramas, and I think it invites in drama fans who normally wouldn't watch a lot of horror films.
Good, there you go. Right down the middle in terms of that. I think that's a good point.
Because I think if you love dramas, but, like, aren't, like, not necessarily hating on horror films, but just haven't really don't really watch them.
Yeah.
I think you could still watch this movie perfectly, like, and be perfectly fine. Same thing for us, like, as a horror podcast and horror fans, we can watch this movie and recognize that it is very strongly also a drama, but also that it is also a horror film.
And both elements of each genre complement each other in this film a lot. Like, you really can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
That's what makes it work. Oh, shit, we're doing too good. All right. So, actually, this is what I think is going to get you right here.
Okay.
Was it wise to give this film an American remake?
Fuck no.
What are your thoughts on it, if you've seen it? And why do you think there was such a disparity between audiences and critics when it came to the American version of this film?
Fuck no.
Okay.
No, I have seen some visual essays on it.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to give it the time of day. Mainly, like, it just looked like, I don't know. I didn't like what they did with the storyline. I don't like what they did with the characters. I think that they tried to make it more palatable for American audiences, and it just, I don't think it landed quite right.
Honestly, I don't think you can remake this film.
No.
It's one of those cases where it's like, there's nothing you can add that's going to enhance what we have seen. There really isn't. Even if you take it, like, I think the reason why it works is because culturally, like, if you're going to Americanize it, it's not going to be the same movie.
Yeah.
It's just not.
No, like we were talking about earlier, there is something very culturally Swedish about this movie.
Yeah, and it's captivating. That's what that's part of what makes it captivating.
Part of what makes it very interesting. And I think translating it into, translating it to an American film just doesn't really do it a service.
Yeah.
I will say, what is, like, the grip Chloe Grace Moretz had on the horror industry in, like, the early 2000s? Because she also did the Carrie remake.
She did the Carrie remake around this time as well. That's right. I have no fucking idea. I don't know.
Like, what the fuck?
Once Kick-Ass happened, they're like, put her in fucking everything.
Yeah, I was gonna say, was it Kick-Ass that, like, they were just like, okay, let's just throw her in everything and see what sticks?
She's gonna be a teenager soon. A lot of these movies have teenagers as stars. She actually knows how to work. Let's put her in movies. Yep, I think so.
I mean,
she did a good job.
She's not a bad actress.
She's not at all.
No, that's not a dig on her. I was just wondering, what horror producer she had backed into it. Like, she had dirt on to be like, I want to be in Carrie.
Or vice versa. Who the fuck knows?
Yeah, right?
But yeah, honestly, I think the American remake, it's one of it. Even though I hadn't seen it, it feels fundamentally unnecessary. Like, just from it existing feels very unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And I think audiences can kind of identify that. Like, this is not the type of movie that's going to make box office.
No.
It really isn't. I mean, it made good money for a foreign film, for sure. Mm-hmm. But most of what it's word of mouth that really got this one around.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it was a special way. You had to get out of your way to watch it.
Yeah. This was definitely a movie we would be seeing at the Frida.
Yeah, exactly. And it's shot that way. It's fundamentally that type of film. When you try to commercialize that type of film,
it doesn't work.
No. It's just not going to work. If it works for critics, fine. That just goes to show how talented a director Matt Reeves really is. If he can get people behind him while taking such a big task.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean
you should.
It's going to work. Exactly.
Just doesn't because mean it you been can made. Doesn't mean you should.
Exactly. No matter how good you are. Now, this one, I have an interesting take. I want to hear your take on this for sure. So, consider the cut content of the novel. The backstory elements, the pedophilia side story, and of course the extra characters that flesh out the world of the story. Would the film work at all with any of this additional content?
This is an interesting question, because I think that there is something inherently, like, lonely about this movie.
Yeah.
Like, I think it has a lot to do with isolation and feeling kind of, like, isolated from your community, from your family. And that coming of age feeling where, like, you're just like, no one understands me.
Yeah. That 12-year-old feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
About to be a teenager, you're just like,
yeah,
I know everything right now.
You know. Mm. And I think specifically when it comes to the additional characters, I think that would have hindered that a little bit. I do like the almost like agoraphobic feeling of this movie at times, where it's like one person in like this huge space, and it just feels incredibly lonely.
Yeah, it definitely does. A lot of empty space around that like the world's kind of coming in on him. It's weird. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I agree with those elements. Or with that point for sure. I think kind of a bad analogy, but if you fleshed out the world, that works more in a TV show. If you try to rush it in the film, we're not gonna have not a lot of time to really flesh out these characters.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like a Simpson side character popping in.
Right.
Yeah, and be like, oh, here's the plot point and the thing that you need to hear. And
then, exposition,
yeah,
gotta go.
Yeah, and really, this film is about these two characters and what they're dealing mm-hmm. with independently and them being a respite from that for each
sure.
other.
Sure.
Yeah, and you're not going to get that when you introduce too many elements. Now, will it work as a TV show? Possibly. If they have a lot of material to work with,
I mean, if they add all of that extra shit, mm-hmm. I mean, I think they have there's potential there.
There's for a one-off series. Give me a one-off series.
A limited series.
Limited series. I think it could be a good run, but you need the talent obviously behind it. Mm-hmm. Although there has been casting and development on it.
I mean,
it's ready to go.
They spent a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for Let the Right One In, like mm-hmm. they spent a year looking for the right kids.
Exactly. You know, they're taking this property seriously. So the pedophilia stuff definitely wouldn't work in a mainstream film. Although this technically isn't a mainstream film,
mm-hmm.
I think they use the right amount of that to kind of allude to it without pushing on that button and then making that part of the main conversation about mm-hmm. the film. It's just something that is in the backdrop. The level of ambiguity here, really. Like, that's what makes the film
definitely
work. And I don't think it would with any of the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But
it helped. Yeah. It lends itself to it.
And, again, on the ambiguity front, Ellie's gender is deliberate mysterious in this movie compared to its source material. How does this choice affect the story, and what is your take on this approach compared to the more direct nature of the novel?
Okay. I'm trying to remember when I watched the movie, like, what the deal was, like, mm-hmm. when the first time I watched it. Because I know I Googled it after, and I was
like... Well, she specifically says, I'm not a boy. Or,
yes.
I'm not a girl.
I'm not a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, and that's, like, a whole point that's brought up multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a moment for me where I was just like, what's going on here?
You're like, hey, color me intrigued.
Color me intrigued. How can I get my gay little hands all over this? yeah, I'm trying to remember, but anyway, it's kind of besides the point. But I don't know. I like the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that it wasn't given, like, some big plot reveal.
Yeah, they weren't, like, leading up to it.
No. Like, yeah. Which is done very, very often in film, and I don't like it. And I've written, actually, papers about this in college. But, yeah, I liked it. I thought it was fine. Like, mm-hmm. I think it goes back to what you were previously saying about, like, the backstory
mm-hmm.
and how it would have kind of cluttered up the film a little bit.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Honestly, if they introduced that element too, if it was exactly the backstory, considering it's 2008, I still don't think people were you know, that's...
Backstory, schmack story.
No, not just that. It's just that the you know, the gay marriage thing was in contention around 2008.
Oh, shit,
like
yeah.
that. Like, people still weren't really on board. And so...
People weren't on board with the gays quite yet.
Nope,
I hear you.
Not the gays back then.
I remember.
But I also think that people would have had a lot of preconceived ideas had they connected the
uh-huh.
two.
I was living a block away from Hillcrest in this time, which Hillcrest, for those of you who don't know, is like the gay neighborhood in San Diego.
Oh, wow.
Like, notoriously, like, mm-hmm. it's the gayborhood. yeah. But yeah, in 2008, like, that was fun for me as a little closet case,
right?
Just being like,
what's going on? Why are the people with crosses being so mean?
Yeah, pretty yeah, much. Like, yeah. I was just like, oh God, this mm-hmm. is awful. I'm not going to internalize this at all.
Oh, and I remember being on Reddit and being,
oh, it must've been
like, well, that's when Reddit was very liberal back then. Like, oh. Very, very liberal. So it was one of those comment sections where people were like, these fucking... They say they love everybody. They say love their neighbor. This bullshit. Like, it was, like, really, like, oh, fuck that. Like, a lot of activism in early Reddit. Really.
I mean, I believe that.
It was a whole different time period. But, again, knowing when it came out and
if... The historical context.
If they were a little more pointed back then, it could have been a whole can of worms that they mm-hmm. probably wouldn't have been good for the film's long-term prospects, really. you know, this is still just, this is just at the tail end of the Bush era.
I'm still surprised that they got away with being like, we're going to show a children's genitals, like, in a movie.
Yeah.
And like, which, like, even then for me, I'm just like, I don't need this.
They were already pushing the boundaries at that point.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, I don't want this. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, there, that was another comment in, like, the half-star comments was just like, this was not necessary.
Yeah. Goddamn Swedes.
Right. Fucking Swedes. Anyway.
But yeah, I think the movie, based on these two questions, it has exactly what it needs to tell its story.
And no, anything else, I agree.
Would either muddy it up
or been gratuitous.
Obviously been gratuitous. Might work better for a TV show. We'll see. We'll see when it comes out. Yes. Bullying is a major aspect of this film. How do you feel about the movie's approach to the subject matter?
I mean, I think it does it well. I don't know if it's necessarily accurate, but also I wasn't a Swedish child in the 80s, so I can't say for certain.
Wow, I thought everybody was a Swedish child in the 80s.
Right, yeah, I know.
Yeah, falling behind.
I hate to drop this bomb on you, but I am not a Swedish child from the 80s.
Oh my God.
I know.
Who did I sign up to do this? This is fucking ridiculous.
It's like, I don't even know you.
I don't even know you. I've been buying you Swedish meatballs for fucking ever. She loves this shit.
Just open my freezer. It's just overflowing.
And I'm like, oh, she never ate one of them.
No, I love Swedish meatballs, first of all. Yeah, they're fucking delicious.
They're fucking amazing.
First of all, don't get it twisted. I mean, as a bullied child, it never got that bad. Like, it never got to a point where I had to physically deafen someone to get them to leave me alone.
No, definitely not. I do like how it does capture the mentality of the victimized, though, of the victim. It captures it really well, because he does kind of have a power fantasy in some moments. Not necessarily, but when he gets his retribution.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As we all have, like, laid there and thought about, like, the, like, perfect retort to, like, some shitty thing, like, someone who's been, like, definitely bullying you has, said to you, and then,
But, yeah, his abilities, him actually maiming the bully, and him going to, like, figure out how to work out, and, like, doing things to, like, make it so he can defend himself. I think, honestly, it's a very good portrayal of the victim, if anything. The bullies themselves, They're 80s villains. They really are.
They are.
Like, they're not layered in any way possible. They're just vicious children. Like, that's it.
And then some of them have, like, drops of remorse. And then it's just like, okay, too little, too late, shitheads.
But, I mean, like, just the base amount you need for the type of film this is.
Yeah.
Because this type of film, not everything's so black and white. But they're as close as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, I mean, even then, what are you when you're a victim of bullying? They all seem vicious. There's no complexity there.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't feel like that when you're at the tail end of it. It really doesn't. And the movie captures that pretty well, I think. So it takes a good approach to bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your neighbor is a vampire and offers you a chance to be their familiar. What do you do? And who would you feed them just in case, you know? Just to...
Who would... I don't have a question for the who I would feed to them, but fuck yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would be their familiar.
I think at this age, I'd be down to be this age forever now. I'd be good.
You're like good?
Yeah. I'm almost peak right now.
That's my question. Like. If like familiar meaning like I get turned into a vampire, because like that's kind of all I've ever wanted.
Yeah, I would just want like a lowdown of like how many people do I have to give you before this happens?
Like, right, like yeah. I would need some pretty strict boundary setting.
Yes.
Like it'd be like, okay, so if I bring you like, let's say like 50 people.
Yeah.
Like is that enough?
Like, does it have to be close to any of these people? Like does it have to be like an emotional thing?
No.
Because I can't do it to everybody.
Because you're basically asking me to become a serial killer.
Yeah.
And I need to know what I'm getting out of it and how soon. So.
Like, oh, but I do live forever. And you know what? I have to see them die anyways. They're going to grow old.
Right.
I don't know. No, I don't know.
No, if I think I've mentioned this probably on Twitter before, but if I ever had the opportunity to become a vampire, I would immediately do it. Like,
oh, yeah, I'd do it.
No, like, even though it means I can't eat garlic ever again, I would do it.
You know, there's a tough one for me also. And I realize it's going to be like one bad night. But hey, I took the vaccine. I'm fine.
Right.
I know what that's like.
I've gotten...
No sunlight.
I've had a migraine. It's fine.
I live in the city anyways. It's alive at night. I'll have things to do.
Right. That would be a good instance of moving to New York.
Yeah. See, there you go. You can jump between buildings. It'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be a good time.
It'd be good.
I agree. And, and in terms of who I'd sacrifice, lots of Republicans, you know?
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I feel like a good amount, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as they don't stay living forever also.
Yeah, as long as they don't also turn into vampires, yeah. Which would be weird.
That'd be interesting. But obviously that's not part of the aspect.
No.
No, no, it isn't. No, they are drained.
They're dead, bitch.
Oh, that's a little vicious. Okay. Yeah. And you know what? Some of them were whiny liberals. How about that?
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh, on one of the dating apps where it's like you can put your political preference. I have other only because like the association with like liberal, I'm just like, because mm-hmm. a lot of you are very like cringy. Like the way that like my parents or like my mom and like my mom's side of the family are liberals, yeah. Where it's just like, oh God.
You know what's weird? Like, I feel like my dating apps, the lefties that are outwardly lefty, they're fucking hot.
Yeah, they're great. And yeah. Like, but mostly just, it's just for my own personal, like, it's my own mentality thing. Cause yeah. It's like the same way that like a lot of like liberals like won't acknowledge that like Obama was definitely also a war criminal.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure.
And like, that's why like, I don't like putting mm-hmm. liberal on dating profiles because I'm just
kind,
like.
Kind of been that way since Carter, really.
I'm just like, you're all bad. Yeah. It's all bad. Yeah, but anyway, yeah. That sorry, soapbox moment.
No, it's funny. Yeah, but
tales from the dating apps.
I always find it interesting too because when I see women who are outwardly conservative on the swiping apps, two extremes: either fucking insanely hot, and they're probably looking for the Wall Street boy, or just they just mean. They look mean. All their comments are very, very, or all their very antagonistic and very mm-hmm. just like, just because I'm blah blah blah. Like it's really vicious.
Just very aggressive.
Yeah, very. Just like, yeah. Oh, I'm not swiping on that. And you're looking for a relationship, not.
No.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah, that's not happening. So yeah.
I'm not looking to get gaslit for the rest of my life. Thank you.
You don't use birth control. I know that. Yeah. So yeah, sacrifice them. That sounds good. Now that we're at the end over here.
Oh wow, we made it.
What would you rate "Let the Right One In" out of 5 snowy Swedish nights?
I'm gonna give it 3.75.
Ooh, I like that rating.
Yeah, I was gonna give it 4, but this like second watch, I was like, oh my God, wrap it up.
You know what? You're not that far off from me. I'm actually giving it 3.5.
Oh, okay, cool.
3.5 for the exact same reasons. I think honestly, just the first hour, it's not bad.
What did I give it? So if you recall, as I mentioned,
I thought you gave it like a 4 or 5.
I did. I think it was actually one of my few 5 out of 5s on the horror challenge. Let me tap through my stories real quick, and I will tell you.
Honestly, audience members here, if it's your first time watching it, it's going to be a 5.
It is. It will
feels
be a
like
5.
A 5. Especially if it's something you're in the mood for.
It was a 5 out of 5. Okay. My review 34 weeks ago. I fucking adored this. Horror/romance always hits me in a weird emotional place that I didn't know exists beforehand, and I will forget exists tomorrow. Loved it. Love vampires. Also, so very queer. I gotta watch some visual essays on this movie ASAP.
There you go.
So, and I did give it a 5 out of 5. I do stand by that, though.
Yeah.
So I'm probably not gonna give it a 5 out of 5 for the second watch, but, and I feel like it is unfair. You know what? I'm going to give it a 4.
I say give it a 4. I think based on your reaction there, your enthusiasm.
I am going to give it a 4. It does feel unfair to mark it down past a Swedish or a snowy Swedish night.
Yeah.
Only because of the pacing this time around. And it was my own fault that I watched it while jet lagged.
Yeah. That makes total sense. I mean, to me, it's so brilliant, but again, mm-hmm. the pacing to me, it's really hard when you know what's going to happen.
It's
like
true.
That does change the movie a bit on a second watch.
I do stand by that. Horror romance just always hits me in a weird place that I forget exists. And I will forget exists tomorrow.
Oh, we totally will because we got some guest spots coming up.
Yeah, let me close this out. That was Let the Right One In from 2008. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us next week.
Yes.
To close out my birthday month. I guess I'll just go out and say it. I am bringing on 2 of your favorite guest hosts.
Yeah, they've been prominently featured this season in particular.
Prominently featured. I told one of them I was going because they frequently berate each other when they're guesting. I'm going to make a Captain America Civil War like remake, only instead of Tony Stark and Captain America, it's going to be their faces.
Oh, these two. That's for sure. I already know who's who.
Yeah. But I'm very excited to talk about this movie next week. This will also be a second watch for me.
Oh, it'll be a second?
Yeah.
This is going to be like a 20th watch for me.
Yeah, this is one of Anthony's favorite movies, I think, ever?
Yeah, this is like top five.
Top five. Okay, cool.
Yeah, one of my favorite movies of all time.
I remember, I think this is one of the first movies I ever watched on my new TV, when my TV was new.
Oh, okay, so the first time I ever watched it was when I had my first like 50-something inch HD TV. Yeah. And I sat like right up top, in the front. Like, I'm fucking real theater. Bummed
because I remember you were like, the next time we watch it, it'll be like a viewing. And we were just like so hopeful of what COVID was going to do.
Oh, different times.
It was simpler times. But join us next week for that. It'll be yet another foreign film.
That's true. And I just realized that when this is releasing, we'll have already done our guest spot.
Yes. So do we want to plug that?
Thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, our thoughts on E3 2021 are actually on the End for All podcast. So go ahead and give that a listen if you have not yet, because we talk about video games for a long time.
Yeah, we talk about video games. I'm sure I say something profoundly stupid.
But you'll have to find out by listening.
Yes, listen, check it out. Thank you guys so much for having us. As always, I'm sure it will be an absolute delight.
That's right. Just like next week, because it's going to get contentious again. We're going to see our two friends here talk about, again, one of my favorite movies. I can't say too much about it.
Yeah, he's going to let it go.
I'm going to lose it. Just your only hint is it's animated. It is graphic. And is it horror? We'll find out. We'll find out.
Join us next week for that. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, even though it was a mess, bear with us. We're doing our best. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review wherever you're listening. Subscribing as well. It means the absolute world to us. And it does, you know, help other people find this podcast. And that is one of the easiest ways to help other people find this podcast, short of sharing it. And if you want to share anything that we do on this podcast, you can find us on social media. We are on all the social media bullshit. We are on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and we are at Facebook and Twitter, at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORROR BLE People's Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you would like to find Anthony, he is on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Still reviewing chicken sandwiches, by the way.
Still reviewing chicken sandwiches. Oh, I meant to text you. I got a chicken sandwich.
From where?
When I was in New York. Where was I?
Where was it? I want to know. I have to know. You know my...
I got it for room service at my hotel.
Oh, interesting.
Like that I was watching Taxi Driver eating a chicken sandwich like the night before my birthday.
Fucking delightful. I love
it. And that. I was just like... I should. I meant to take a picture of it and send it to you and be like, I should review. You should.
You should. You should have reviewed it for me.
I should have reviewed it for you.
No.
It was fine. It was fine.
I wonder too, because Barb's has one. It looks pretty good in their photos.
Okay. That means.
Bun's a little big, but you know what? I'll take the bun.
It's fine. We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. Mine was a little over pickled, which means a lot coming from me because I love pickles.
I know. Me too. That's just a little weird.
Yeah. It was kind of like there were too many because, you know, like normally there's like a good ratio of like 3 to 5.
This one
had like 7 to 10.
Oh, they
like,
covered the whole top.
Like
no,
it was just
too
like
much.
Too many pickles.
That's too much.
Like
no.
it was overwhelming.
Hey, better than having less pickles though.
It's
you
true.
Get one pickle
if,
and
if
a
I have
dry,
like one, if I get
yeah.
one to three pickles on a chicken sandwich, I will go feral. Like,
yeah. Just toss it right back in the drive-thru.
Unless it's McDonald's, because, like, they have to. But whatever. Anyway. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. This has been Chicken Sandwich Talk. we will catch you next week. And if your neighbor stumbles into your apartment bloody and asking to be invited in, just say no.
Yeah. And
or fall in love. Whatever. Yeah, okay. I'm not your boss.
And, Swedish Nights, pretty cool looking.
Bye.
So, yeah.